Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, back to AU Radio's Game Cabinet. We are so sorry that we missed last week, but man, could I not get out of bed.
That is okay. Life happens sometimes.
Yeah, I was put down with a small infection, and we are back. It was nothing super serious, just some not fun stuff. They had me on some fun pills and then not fun pills.
I'm glad you're feeling better.
I am too. I still have some of my antibiotics, but how they make me feel, I have become significantly weary of them. So it's really hard to like take them the four times a day they ask me to.
Oof.
Well, and the ones that they had me on, this was a new thing for me. I'd only ever been on ones that were like, okay, take them twice a day.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool. That I can kind of handle. I know how to combat that. And they're a certain potency, essentially. They put me on more or less the same kind, but said take them four times a day instead.
Ooh.
Yeah, they were really worried about it for a minute. It was in one of my teeth. So, like, I kind of think I remember the moment. I was eating, like, a pita chip or something, and it felt like something stabbed me. And apparently a super small fragment of that happened to break off. Even through brushing and things, it didn't come out. And infection. Yay, stupid human biology.
Teeth, man.
Yeah. But yeah, it put me down to where, like, I was woke up, like, really early in the morning by Katie to be like, hey, we're taking you to the hospital. And so
yeah.
We went into that, but the antibiotics made me super sick, which caused me to become dehydrated. And then they were like, yeah, you can't go to work for at least a couple days. We need to make sure that you can eat food and do things like that without losing it, essentially. And so,
and you know, I love sitting up here. I love chatting with you. I love talking about games. I know our listeners really like also participating in that. I'd rather you be better.
Yeah, I felt bad, but I at the same time was like, it's not going to be fun to sit here with me talking like this and like trying to think while just really uncomfortable. It wouldn't have been good for anybody. Everybody would have hated it.
Yeah. And you know, hey, yeah. that's part of podcast life, right? Anyway, are we talking about this week?
This week, we're sliding open the cabinet door. We're reaching our hands in and we're pulling out all of the RPGs one more time. Well, probably more than once.
We'll probably do it more than one more time.
But we're coming back to it. This time, we're not going to talk about just playing RPGs, RPGs in general. We're going to kind of take that scope and zoom it towards something a little more specific. And this time, we're going to talk about GMing or game mastering, dungeon mastering, whichever system you're playing. It depends on what they are allowed to say.
Storyteller.
Yeah. It's actually a weird copyright thing. Dungeons and Dragons has the copyright for Dungeon Master.
Yeah.
That's why, like, Pathfinder, Palladium even, they just call it Game Master.
Yep.
Because they're like, all right, fine, that's the most open resource term we can find.
Which,
that's what we're going to go with.
They both work.
Yeah. I like GM. I think it sounds better than DM, primarily because DM to me makes me think of direct messaging.
Well, yeah. Now, back when D&D was first starting to appear on the scene, that was before the era of really direct messaging existed.
Yeah, a lot before the like real internet.
So, you know, they probably, if D&D was created today, I have a feeling that DM would not be a thing.
I don't think so either. And that's why I just tend to say GM. One, it's a little more encompassing. And then on top of that, it just sounds a little more roleplay and less internet-y, in my head at least. No, a lot of people ask me, you know, what? How do you get into GMing? What's the important part of GMing? Do I need to know all the rules for GMing? All kinds of questions like that. And I figured that you GM a game. I happen to GM a couple. I like RPGs. If I have my druthers, I'm playing in at least one, and then I'm GMing or playing in at least two other games.
Yeah.
But that's because that's what I like to do with a lot of my free time. It's getting to the point that, like, Katie, Kyle, and I are sitting around, and I might start a Witcher RPG for them, because running it with two people that have no clue about that world and no clue how that system really works, great. That's another thing. If you're going to start GMing, it's always okay to pick up a new system, because then nobody knows what's happening. You got to read enough rules. That's how I put it.
You get rid of the rules lawyers.
Yeah. The second that you're like, oh, has anybody played this? And everybody goes, no. If you're a first-time GM, perfect. absolute perfection because then none of them know what's happening. No more rules lawyers.
I've got a copy of that Witcher RPG at my house.
Yeah, it's so good. I've taken time to read it. Like, yeah. I've been going through it. I read enough, as I'm going to say quite a bit through this.
Yeah.
You don't need to know. Let's start with that. First thing about jamming. You do not need to know all of the rules. One of the things that made me the most okay with that I had ever been was I was watching the oh-so-famous Critical Role. They brought up a relatively simple rule that I happened to know off the top of my head. And I was like, oh, it's this, sitting in my own room by myself like a crazy person, talking to the TV.
As we all do.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, it's this. And then I'm like, oh, yeah. And Matt Mercer was like, well, hold on 1 second, and had to reach over, grab his player's handbook, put it in front of him, and look at a rule. People hold their GMs to this ridiculous standard of Matt Mercer, first of all. Also state that you're not him. That's a great way to start off.
I'm
not that guy. But so many people come into it with a expectation of something like that, because that's where they're coming from. They're coming from seeing Critical Role, Acquisitions, Inc., or any of those other guys like Adventure Zone. So having him on air be like, oh, let me look up that rule real quick, made me be like, okay, cool. Even people who like try to hold up to this crazy standards like he does, you still don't know everything. There's so many rules.
And that's the thing about running a game is an open book test.
Yeah.
You're going to come up to things that you don't have the answer for, but you have a book. You can look that up. And if you have a table that is even slightly worth playing with, if you're like, hey guys, I need to look this rule up really quick, nobody is going to care.
No, nobody's going to care. And I know plenty of GMs who have come up with simple creative solutions so that the players themselves feel like they're still involved in the activity of looking up the rule.
Mm-hmm.
You're aware of our primary core GM's rule, loading screen.
Loading screen is super fun. It's a great asset.
Roll a d20. First one to get a natural 20 gets 5 gold in their pocket, but it keeps your players busy.
Yeah.
And that's it. And as a GM, I love that it wastes one of your crits.
Yeah, there's that too. Well, I played with a couple of really, really amazing GMs who, if they didn't know a rule, like if something came up and they're like, wow, I don't actually know that, but we were in the middle of combat, or we were in the middle of whatever, they'd be like, I'm going to allow it this time, but I'll research that tonight.
Yeah, next time the answer might be no, because we found out how it works properly. But for now,
we're in the middle of combat. I'm not going to stop the flow of the game. It sounds reasonable, so I'm going to go ahead and allow it, but I'm going to research it tonight when I get home.
Yeah, exactly those kinds of things. And then there are lots of GMs that get caught up on the rules.
Yeah.
And I'm a very, you, lots of people have started hearing this from me. Rule of cool. I'm a big fan of rule of cool, as long as it isn't overwhelmingly breaking.
The Dungeon Master's Guide, the actual, this is for D&D.
Yes.
I'm saying this for D&D. The pinnacle rule book for D&D in the very beginning states that these are the rules as written, but the Dungeon Master has final say in what works at their table.
Exactly. And that's a big thing that rules lawyers forget.
Yeah. Dude, I love that so much. I've played at a few tables with some rules lawyers, and I've had a DM that just pulls out the rule book and just points at that and goes, I said no.
Yeah, done.
Obviously, don't abuse it.
Yeah.
Don't make the game miserable for your players.
Yeah.
But the rules are guidelines.
Yeah. My favorite example of it, I'm going to put him on blast and he'll deal with it where he wants. My cousin, not a full argument, but started a small argument over 5 feet with Mage Hand. And I looked at him and went, are you going to argue over 5 feet for a grappling hook landing on a boat? Really?
Yeah.
He kind of took a moment, realized what he was trying to make an argument for, and was like, no, no. I even reflavored it, too. I was like, all right, fine. The Mage Hand catches it and then rethrows it 5 feet.
Yeah.
Like, there. Happy? It's the same outcome. It's the same things are being done. I'm not going to make you make a check for throwing a grappling hook 5 feet. I'm not going to make your Mage Hand do it either. You know, that's a rule you can hold me to later in the future. If you want to throw it out 10 feet, essentially, sure, go for it. I'm not going to make you roll. It's 5 feet.
That's 5 feet. Your character, if you have a decent, not even a good, a decent dexterity score, you should be able to throw something 5 feet. Not as an attack, but yeah. It's just a like toss.
Yeah. I figure any character, even a character with like 6 dexterity, I would expect that you could throw a rock 5 feet.
Yeah.
Like you, that's just the, it's not that hard. Not well coordinated.
I was going to say, maybe I would argue
exactly
that, maybe,
where you want it to
that
go.
Maybe your mage hand couldn't catch it at 5 feet, but like you could throw it
exactly.
5 feet.
You could, but that's the thing. Catching it? Yeah, probably not. Throwing it? Sure. That's more strength in my opinion. You're throwing a thing this far. Like, yes, you can use your dexterity for that, but that's why javelins get the either or. Yeah. You can use your strength or you can use your dexterity, whichever's more applicable.
And there's plenty of times in the games that I've run that I'm like, I'm not going to make you roll for that. You're fine.
Yeah.
I think that's like one of the things that I would tell people who are new to game mastering going into it. If every single time your players want to do something, you're making them roll for it. If it's something mundane.
Yeah.
You're breaking the immersion of the game.
Yeah, exactly.
You're breaking the immersion of the game. If they're actively searching for something, yeah, make them roll for it. If they're checking for locks, yeah, make them roll for it. But like,
in my Pathfinder games, once we get to a certain level, generally around level 5, if we have a rogue who has been taking lock picking the whole time, I'll just tell them, roll a d20, tell me if you roll a 1.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, if you roll a 1, then fine. Then yes, there will be repercussions for this thing. But if you don't roll a 1, you're plus 9 at this point, or plus 10 already, Pathfinder gets high really quick, is going to be enough. That base lock is only at 10. There's no reason for me to make you take time for that. Like, that's why.
If there's something that they want to do that's a little weird, but like, I don't think it deserves a full roll, I'll be like, hey, pick high or low, and I'll roll a d20 for them.
Yeah.
You succeed or fail.
Exactly. Like, something real quick that we can roll and just get it out of the way real quick, and they don't have to worry about numbers or anything.
And it keeps the story flowing. It keeps the immersion, because if you're nickel and diming every single roll, if you're making them do every single check for every single thing, it gets really obnoxious.
Yeah. There are some games, there are some play groups that's what they want. But majority of the time, people aren't going to be pleased with it. And your job as the game master is, one, you are not the enemy.
No.
You are part of the group.
Role-playing games are cooperative storytelling. That is what they are. You are the narrator of the story, but you are relying on your players to help you build the story as you go. You get to tell them what the places look like, what these people are, what the consequences of the things they've done are, but you are relying on them to tell the story with you.
Exactly. And that leads me into one of my favorite rules, actually. I go by a very heavy yes and rule. I heard it when watching GM Tips on YouTube. And one of the guys came on and he was like, yeah, I'm a big fan of the yes and rule. And I was like, instantly, like, there's something important happening.
Explain to me the yes and rule. I don't think I've heard it.
Oh, I thought I've explained it. Like, as one of my players, I thought that you were pretty familiar with it.
I feel like we've talked about it, but I don't think it's actually come up in our gameplay.
You do it enough that it's not something I guess I must not have had to explain to our group, because our group does it enough. They all have this idea, but it's a very easy thing I like to use, especially with newer players, so that they understand that it's your turn. You're in a forest. That's the most description I'm going to give you of the forest. Like, if it's a super stereotypical one, if it's like, oh, you're in a spooky dank forest, cool. That's also as far as I'm going now. I'm not populating that whole forest. I kind of rely on my players for that.
Low render distance.
Yeah. I see a beehive over there. Yes, and? What are you going to do with that beehive?
So, is there a beehive? There a beehive here?
Yeah. Okay, yeah. You don't have to ask me.
Yeah, for sure. There's a beehive.
Is it a reasonable thing to be in a forest? Don't abuse this power and there's a beehive every 30 feet, but, you know.
Just dropping beehives on people every 30 feet.
But yeah, you're in one of your 3 encounters in the woods and you're like, I take the beehive over there and shoot it with my arrow to try to drop it down and see if I can get them to scurry off these guys.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, sure. That's completely reasonable to be in a thing. You know, like, oh, I'm walking through the woods and I see a squirrel. I shoot it and get some little bit of dinner. Cool.
Cool.
All reasonable things for you. Exactly. These are all reasonable things to be seeing.
I get that. Because, yeah, our group just does that stuff. But I feel like our group's a little more like, hey, is there a squirrel around?
Yes.
And you're just like, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I want to kill the squirrel.
Yeah, and that's where that comes from.
Can I find some mushrooms while we're here?
Yes, of course you can.
Of course, we're in a forest.
Roll for it. You know, things like looking for mushrooms. I'll make you roll for it. It's generally a 10. Yeah, it's very much one of those pass or fail. I don't care. Like,
yeah,
you're probably going to pass. You'll find some basic mushrooms. Are you looking for something super specific? Something that does something specific? DC is going to go up. I'll just change it from my end, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, the yes and rule, just accepting what your players want to add to the world. That's part of it, you know? I see a boulder. I want to hide behind it. Cool. Well, are we out on the, you know, are we in a craggy area where I've described being like, hey, it's a craglands, you know, boulders and such. Yeah, cool. Go hide behind a boulder. I'm going to assume that there's at least a few that you can kind of crouch behind.
We're on an open plain. I want to hide in the tall grass.
Cool. You know, that's what a tall, you know, that's what a plain has. Bunch of tall grass. Go for it.
Yeah.
No, exactly. Things like that and just being very accepting. Like you were saying, it's group narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Don't rely on your GM to describe everything in the room. It's a thing that actually bothers me in novels.
Yeah.
Like, I had a really hard time getting through Stephen King's The Gunslinger. I really like the book. I love the concept.
Man is wordy.
But spending a paragraph and a half describing a room we're never, ever going to come back into.
That's one of my issues with the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. They just get a little too wordy.
A little too wordy.
And it's like, I don't, especially where we're at nowadays in sci-fi fantasy and all that. If you're a nerd of that stuff, you get it.
Now,
you know what's up.
And I come at it from, I do write.
Yeah.
I'm a narrative person. I don't like describing every single little thing down to the detail, but I do like putting a little more detail into my environments because I like to instill a sense of where you are to people.
Yeah, there's a difference between being able to do that where you're like, it's a red room with a nice, this kind of carpeting and like setting the kind of scene that you're really going for.
Yeah.
But you also know when they walk into a bar, you can be like, it's a saloon.
Yeah. Guys, this is a tavern. There's like four tables in the front. There's a bar in the back. There's some booths to the side.
Boom. You have described.
Loud, obnoxious.
Yeah.
You can't even hear the band.
Your players should be able to fill in with their brain what kind of stools are there. You know, they should be able to find what kind of.
I'm not going to describe to you the particular damask pattern of the wallpaper and how the bed frame is carved in Baroque fashion.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a very nice, ornate four-poster bed, and the wallpaper looks very expensive.
Yeah, fill it in with your brain. Let the player's imagination take over. They're all going to have a slight different cue on what that room is. But as far as the big picture, and then that's where they get to influence each other's pictures. If you think about it as a like moving in your head.
I will say... that I do enjoy adding in random details to rooms. Like, and there's a very nice carpet on the floor. Because then they're like, what's important about the carpet?
Why the carpet? Is it a carpet? Is it a smuggling carpet? Is it a flying carpet? I cast identify on it.
It's, congratulations, you wasted a 20. It's a carpet. It ties the room together.
It really ties the room together.
Or if you're like, and there's an ornate chest on one wall.
I open the chest.
This guy keeps his bed clothes into the chest. He's very weird about his bed clothes.
It's actually where he keeps his special pile of compost.
He keeps a lot of very questionable magazines in there.
See, and that's my favorite thing. I agree with you. Putting in the weird thing just to mess with the players.
And you know, because I play in games with you, you know how paranoid of a player I am.
Oh, God, yeah. And the more paranoid players are, the more fun it is for your GM.
Because you, like, point out one specific thing that I don't think needed to be pointed. Like, if I was describing this room, I wouldn't point that out. And I'm immediately like, why?
Yeah, it's a glowing fish hook. What's special about it? It glows.
It has light cast on it.
Yep, permanent enchantment of light on it. It's really great for fishing.
It's really good, especially deep sea fishing.
Aw, yeah.
Aw, yeah.
But yeah, the, you know, communicative storytelling, your job is to help with the rules.
Yeah.
But to also not know them all. I constantly tell my players, especially when we're playing Pathfinder, especially on Pathfinder, know your feats, know your spells. I'm not going, like, if I have to question it, I'll go look for it if I have to. But if I'm playing with a good, healthy group, I shouldn't have to ask you what it is and then still go double check.
Well, and setting the parameters for your players is also important. As a game master, session zero.
Oh,
session zero is such an important thing for any table because it gives you a chance to set your expectations for the table, but also the table to give you their expectations of what you are going to be doing.
Yeah, I've asked for things as a player.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, is there going to be, I want to know what kind of adventure we're going to be on.
Yeah.
I don't want to make a fire wizard and then we go to hell.
Yeah.
Where my fire wizard is useless.
Well, I'm running Icewind Dale.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be an isolation horror game.
Go.
So when I sat down with the group that I'm running for, I was like, hey guys, here's what this game is supposed to be. And I need to make sure that we're all on board for that. And it kind of ended up, we're not totally on board for that.
Did it get a little weird?
So I have scaled back some of the really dramatic parts of that game because I don't want anybody feeling uncomfortable about the level of bad.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to have to talk about a part of Pathfinder episode we've had to.
Yeah.
Because I'm just going to do that.
Which, and I think that that's, again, it's your responsibility as the game master to make sure that your players are having the most fun that they can have.
Yeah.
And if that means that you have to tweak the campaign a little bit to make it a little bit less triggering for someone,
yeah,
do that. Do yeah. that thing.
Do it.
And that's not catering to people, and it's not being, I don't know.
Not everybody needs Goblin Slayer in their life.
Not everybody needs that.
Like, my fellow fans of the podcast who like their anime, they will very much understand what I mean by that.
Yeah.
Those of you who don't go look up Goblin Slayer. It's not for you.
No, don't.
I will straight say that. Don't go look it up. It's not for you. Don't worry about it. Keep in your happy little bubble of awesome. But that brings me to a point of the writers for D&D.
Mm-hmm.
That's not their job.
No.
Their job is to make the best story. And on top of that, they kind of have to prep it for any kind of person to play. It
yeah.
is much easier for, you seem like a less bad GM if you have to tone it down.
Yeah.
Than if you're the GM that has to tone it up.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've gotten into a spot that with some of my friends' backgrounds, I can't run it the way they want me, to, like that they suggest it.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have a problem with how they're telling their story? Absolutely not. I love Grimdark. I'm one of those guys
yeah.
that if it was me who was a player and I was running with a slightly different group, I would be like, go ham, take me to the darkest corners of awful.
Yeah.
And that's also a part of like your GMing style.
Exactly. Well, and that's so many people get caught up. It's a big point of contention right now in the RPG world about, quote, creating safe spaces, unquote, and how it's ruining the game. And it's not. It's making the game better. It's making the game more yeah. dynamic because you are not forcing your players to deal with things that they are uncomfortable with, which yeah. ruins the game.
Yeah. Or, and in my opinion, it's not ruining the game. Maybe that group isn't for you. I think too many players and GMs both get too caught up and, well, this is my group and this is the only group I'm going to
yeah.
find. No, it's not. There are plenty of people out there, especially if you're a GM. That's why we're kind of talking about how to get into it. As a player, it's kind of hard to play, like find a group.
Yeah.
It can be kind of difficult. As a GM, it is never that hard, and you can craft that group to be what you kind of want.
And again, that comes back to session zero. That
yeah.
comes back to setting expectations and being very clear, hey, this we're playing Curse of Strahd, but there are some very problematic elements in this game that I am planning to run. Here is what they are. I will not be tailoring them out because this is the campaign I want to run.
Yeah.
If you are uncomfortable with that, this might not be the proper table for you. I would love to run a game for you at another point.
Exactly. I'm looking to run kind of a horror story, which, like I said, I like being taken to the darkest corners of the awful. That's why I talk with, that's why I said, hey, we're going to talk about this section that's coming up, because...
So, I'm of the opinion that you can tell a great horror story without certain elements involved.
Very much so.
I'm going to address specifically sexual assault.
Very much.
There is a lot of people that think that that is part of what makes a good horror story. And I very strongly disagree
no.
with that. I've heard so many arguments about it in the last week.
Yeah. It's, no, that, I don't get as gory.
Yeah.
Things like that. Like, that's not something, yeah,
like,
I agree with you. That's not something
especially
in your
I am all for gore.
RPGs.
Like, I love gore. I love visceral descriptions. I love really horrifying things. But I think there are some things that if your players aren't comfortable with it, you just don't get, you don't
yeah.
just do it.
The perfect example of that I can come up with is an example you've played with me through, I'm pretty sure. I think mm-hmm. you were playing with us by that point.
Possibly.
When I was playing Philip.
I didn't get to play with you when you guys
okay.
played Philip.
When I was playing Philip, because I was playing with, like, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We were playing with George, my mom, my dad was the GM, my cousin, and my grandma, and myself. My character was a chaotic neutral, bounty hunter Goliath from the far north that doesn't really understand society and is very chaotic neutral. He is very much there for himself and what he wants out of life.
Yeah.
And we got to a moment where we captured a gentleman. And I looked at my GM and went, I'm going to go torture this gentleman. And my GM, not in the wrong here, but didn't handle this the best way, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Primarily because he went, okay, describe it. Me as another GM went, are you sure? That's when he asked me for a cigarette break.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that's cool. And that's when he started handling it more appropriately. Like, he was trying to push, no, if you're going to torture this guy, I'm going to make you do it. And I was like, okay, let me rephrase this. I, as a player, and I'm into the headspace of my new character, of my character at this point.
Yeah.
And how he does not give a shit about this group yet. This is what he's going to do. I'm not going to change that opinion. Yeah. If you'd like, you and I can step outside where we can have a smoke and I can go through the talk. Portions of talking with you.
If I was running that game, I'd be like, okay, so what we're going to do is have a series of roll-offs. If you roll higher than me, let's say on intimidation, you will get a piece of information. If I roll higher than you, I'm not going to give you that information.
Making it nice and easy and quick and not forcing that awkward moment for other players. Which, I don't want to make any of my other players uncomfortable.
And that also depends on the group that I was playing with.
Yeah.
Because if I was playing with a group that maybe wouldn't be comfortable with that kind of stuff, yes, that is exactly what I would do.
Yeah,
if we were playing with a really chill group that like isn't weird about torture stuff, I'd be like, describe this to me. I need to know how many fingers you break.
Yeah, and that was the thing is that he started kind of pushing me and I was like, okay, I'm going to start as light as I can and then get a little more and then ramp it up slowly so that there's probably going to be a point you as my GM are going to realize I'm serious about what my character is going to be doing here. It came to the point after a few things were done, the character went unconscious, and my GM was like, well, now he's unconscious, and I went, ha, cure light wounds, and brought him back to consciousness, and was like, and now I continue, and that's about when he was like, and we're gonna cut
and
from
we're
there.
We're done.
Like, that moment of me being like, I bring him back to consciousness, my GM was like, okay, your character is that kind of chaotic neutral. I'm not going to bother with this anymore. Here are the few pieces of information you're going to get out of him. He's like, that is all you're going to get, though. And I was like, that's fine. I'm cool with you just being like, cool, this happens for 10, 15 minutes. You get this and we're moved on. That's what I was trying to go for here, my man.
Yeah.
And we just talked about it later. I was like, but I'm not going to change what my character's going to do.
Yeah.
I'm like, my character's going to do what he does. It is up to you and me how we want to address that and how quickly we want to move it on.
Well, and that's the other thing that a lot of GMs forget is you have the ability to take these things off screen.
Yeah, you have, Corey calls it the screen wipe of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like, woo,
I call it fade to black.
Yep, just go to the next scene.
Okay, that happens. And...
and now over here.
And we're here.
Yeah, and that's the thing that if my character, my players say that, depending, most of the time I'm not in a group where I'm going to be like, okay, cool, I can be chill and let this guy go off and...
Yeah.
Be the storyteller he probably that he can be. I have a few players who want their characters to do those things, but don't have the stomach to tell me that their characters do that thing. And that's fine. I get that you're trying to play a character that is not you.
Yeah.
You're trying to play outside your comfort zone. You're not comfortable with that. Let's fade to black and have it move on. Your character did that.
And that's another, like, communicating with your players. I have a player at my table who plays a very charismatic character. But they're a bit socially awkward. And so they can't, when they're trying to use charisma, when they're trying to persuade someone, they don't always have the words that they want to use, but their character should know how to do that.
Yeah, that's what the charisma role is for.
Like, it has always bothered me. I've played at a few tables where I'm like, I want to persuade this guy. And the DM's like, tell me what you're going to say to him to persuade him. And I'm like, no.
No, I want to use I'm using the dice here to help me with the words I don't possess.
I'm trying to persuade him to let us do the thing. With whatever words will persuade him to do the thing. And if I roll low, then I don't use the right words.
Yeah, if you have a cool spiel you want to give me real quick, I'll add a bonus. That's normally what I've gotten to, is this is what the charisma roll is for, is to help your character pick the right words to get what you want.
Yeah.
Have you had a good spiel beforehand? I'll give you a bonus. I've had some players who are like, this is exactly what I'm going to say. And they're not the right kind of words.
They're the wrong
words. And guess what they get?
Disadvantage.
You get a negative. And it's nothing against that player, but if you're going to be dedicated to those words,
right?
Then yeah,
if you're trying to use charisma and persuasion, and you threaten to cut the guy's kneecaps off, you're wrong.
Yeah, you're looking for intimidation, but we're going to roll it as persuasion because that's what you asked for.
You asked for persuasion. I'd like to use a persuasion because I have proficiency in persuasion, but not intimidation, so I want to use my persuasion skill. Cool, but you have disadvantage because what you are actually doing is trying to intimidate this
exactly.
guy.
Exactly. Which also is a good thing for GMs. Don't be afraid to let your players make a mistake.
Oh, yeah, no, mistakes are the greatest.
Like a bit that I kind of want to highlight as GMing, I like to GM for kids. I GM for my siblings. I've started recently GMing for Katie's step little girl, which mm-hmm. Her name's Kaylee. She's a doll. We happened to lightly talk about playing RPGs. She seemed really interested, so we started up a little campaign.
Nice.
While we were playing, though, she's still getting used to, one, you're not the main character. Everybody is.
Yeah.
You know, kind of a thing.
Group storytelling.
Yeah. You know, she's getting used to everything. And so Katie went to make a stealth check. I think that Kaylee heard strength check.
Mm.
And that's totally understandable. I mishear things all the time. This is where communication between your players is really good.
Yeah.
Being able to be like, hey, what did you say you're rolling? Stealth? Okay, cool. I'm going to follow your lead and stealth up as well. But she went, I want to make a strength check. Made no sense for her to be doing so. But as a GM, okay. On what? Like, what are you trying to obtain from it? Oh, I'm trying to obtain, I want to see how strong I am. Cool. I made her punch the ground, and then had a couple monsters come at them. Nothing that was should have killed them. They survived barely. But the point was to show, hey, this is, you know, you shouldn't just do things all the time.
Yeah,
and don't be afraid to teach your players that.
Absolutely. Again, going back to as the DM or the GM or the storyteller or whoever, it's not you versus your players. Which also lends to, it's okay to let them make mistakes, but it's also okay to be like, hey, don't forget you have this ability.
Yeah, exactly. She got caught in a tight spot 10 minutes later in that combat, mm-hmm. and I was like, hey, don't forget about this spell that you took today. And she's like, oh, yeah, cool. I'm going to use that. And I was like, excellent, there we go. Especially with kids, you're going to have to remind them of their stuff.
Constantly.
But I don't think people should be afraid to GM for kids of any age that talks.
Dude,
that's
kids have such a fun imagination too. Like, yeah. Running games for kids is super fun.
That's the only prereq I have for running for kids. Can your kid talk, like, and communicate with me decently well? Yeah, cool. Then we can play games. I'm not talking they've got to be an all-star, you know, like 10-year-old knows how to communicate with the world.
I've seen a lot of people also take a lot of the math out of it for kids.
Yeah.
Where they just make it straight dice rolls.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you roll your dice and that's what we're dealing with. Yep. I did that forever with the boys. I didn't even bother making characters with them. I was just like, do whatever you want. I'll make a thing for it. It's fine.
You roll this dice to hit, you roll this dice for your sword.
Yep. That's pretty much it. I was like, yeah, exactly. I cut down how many dice they had in front of them, showed them which ones are which, and you let them go. Kaylee happens to be, luckily enough, just old enough that she is, like, ready to start playing Dungeons & Dragons.
Which is great.
Which is so much fun, because I've only been able to do those lighter end games for kids, so it's kind of cool to be at getting her first campaign, but also at old enough that it will be continued to play.
Yeah.
Essentially will be a thing, and I'm super stoked. And it's a small enough group, too, that it's going to be really good to know that we're making another good player out there. And that's the thing that's so much fun as a GM. Like, when you get a new player and you know you're making them a good player to the community, like, when they leave your table and go to the next one or start their own next table, you can be like, man, they're going to play a good game. They're going to do it how the community should be doing it.
It always makes me so sad when I hear about people who are like, yeah, I tried to get into D&D or I tried to get into Pathfinder and I got this group and they were really short with me. They weren't patient. They, like, I didn't know what I was doing and it just made me feel like I was a burden to the group. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
You embrace your new players, man. You gotta lift those people up and be like, hey, it's okay. Go ahead and ask your questions. Like, let's clarify. What do you need? What are you having trouble with? Like,
yeah. As a player, please remember what we tell you. I've had that in the past where some people don't want to learn. But if you're a wanting-to-learn player.
A lot of issues with memory problems. Just with my anxiety and stuff like that. It does memory wipes for me occasionally. Super fun. Love it. I take notes.
Yeah.
My character sheets, if you look at my paper character sheets, have notes scribbled all over in the margins because I'm like, hey, this is what I need to remember for this thing. This is what I need to remember for this thing. This is how this role works.
Exactly. And being able to teach new players how to self-care like that in games makes them better players, which makes our community stronger.
I've been playing 5e for, I mean, not as long as some people. I've been playing for about 4 years. Wanted to play longer than that.
I think 5e has only been out for 4 or 5 years.
I started playing when I started working at Adventures.
I think that's about the time 5e came out.
Yeah, but I've been playing for a good solid 5 years, like nonstop, or 4 years, for the last 4 years. And it's one of the things that I constantly tell new players. It's like, hey, I've been doing this for this long, and I still have to leave myself notes. I still don't remember how to do stuff. Constantly. It's okay not to remember. And it's the same thing with running a game. It is okay not to remember how to do certain things.
Oh my. It's okay to not remember where you left off.
Oh.
I will tell people that right now. There have been multiple times I've come to the table, completely forgotten where we are, and you, all right, what do you guys remember we did last? Just ask your players what they remember and pick up from there. If that means that you come back a little bit and then you get into a room and they're like, oh, yeah, we did take these guys out. Cool. Pop into the next room. Just push it forward.
That's what we had to do with my Icewind Dale game, because we were on hiatus for like 4 or 5 months. And we got back together, and the first session that we had back, I was just like, okay, guys, so I kind of remember what room we're in, but I really don't remember anything else that has happened. Let's recap.
Yeah, and it's especially as a GM, if you're running an adventure path, like both of us seem to tend to do is running in paths. You're going to continue reading when you're not playing, and you're going to have your head full of so much stuff that's in the future.
Well, and like, your players are also going to probably skip around. They're not going to be
perfectly lineal through the book like you're going to read it. That's been so terrible in the past, you guys. You guys are the worst.
We're so good at it.
Prep the entire building immediately down to the first flight of stairs into the rooms that you need to be in. Awesome. Let's go.
Who needs to go explore the second floor when we could go straight to the basement?
It's a second, third, and fourth floor that all had beautiful panelings on it that told this amazing story, and then you guys just destroyed it.
We're just like, let's go straight to the end. That's okay. They did that to me in Icewind Dale, too. I had prepped 2 towns, because there's like 10 towns in Icewind Dale. And I was like, based on our trajectory of where I think you guys are going, I'm going to prep these 2 towns, and I'm going to prep them really good. And they didn't go to either of them.
Skips over both of them and goes straight into third town. Yep.
And I was like, guys, I'm going to be honest. I got nothing.
Yeah. That's where we're going to call session.
Welcome to this tiny town that has nothing.
You know what? I've had some of my favorite moments, though, in those moments of like, I did not expect you guys to go here. Well, I'm just going to make some kooky characters that you guys probably will forget, and then those end up being everybody's favorites. You're like, oh, I'm just gonna wing it, and then people are like, that was so much fun, and I'm like, why am I, you get to that moment, you're like, why am I prepping so much if you guys just like the winging it so much?
I made a dwarf merchant. He's the blacksmith at one of the first towns they went into, and I accidentally gave him a Brooklyn accent because I went to talk. And that was the first thing that came out of my mouth. And now they are so excited to go back and talk to him and his sister. And I hate it. I hate it so much. Because he's not even he doesn't have a name.
That's Hemlock for me.
I do love Hemlock.
How much you guys like to go to Hemlock. And I feel bad. He came out with a very McCree style voice. But that I was just trying to pull from my country side of things, and that was just the best. That was the first one that came out.
Talked to him for an hour and a half. By the time
I have him send you away.
By the time they were done asking their questions, I couldn't stop talking like that. I was stuck in a really terrible approximation of a Brooklyn accent for the entire rest of the game.
That happened.
And they're like, I can't wait to go back and see our blacksmith friend. I'm like, he's dead.
Yeah, that moment, he died of a heart attack. When? 2 days after you saw him.
He got possessed by that magic sword you left him.
And now he's dead.
And now he's dead. He's not dead. I'm just pouting about it.
But yeah, and that's the other thing. We should probably talk about prepping.
Prepping!
Prepping is important. Over-prepping is stupid.
It's a lot of people that I've talked to who run games for the first time. They want everything to be right.
Yeah.
They want to get everything done. I am really lucky that I know a lot of GMs and that I had time to, like, watch GMs and listen to GMs before I started my own campaign.
Yeah.
Because that was a huge bonus for me. Because it is so easy to try and overprep. I guarantee you, no matter how much you prep, your players are going to do something you don't expect.
Or even worse, you prep what turns out to be 12 sessions in like a week. And that leads to heavy burnout.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I accidentally did. I think the first one we played was Iron Fang Invasion. Yeah, that's where I got my TPK cheesecake from. They tried to appease me and to be like, don't kill us again.
Please don't kill us.
And then I kept killing them. I felt really bad for that group. My dice did not like them.
I'd say the things that are important to prep are vague ideas of town names.
Yeah.
Like, that are
on... a small list of them.
That are on your path of places they might go. If you have any important characters...
Yeah, any small mini-bosses or anything like that.
Yeah, or even townsfolk NPCs that are actually in the campaign.
Yeah.
I always try and have a list of random names.
That's
because they will always go, what's this guy's name? I don't know.
Gary.
His name is Greg.
Oh, yeah, I come up with a lot of really bland names.
His name is Jeff.
Yeah. He's a nobody. You guys are probably going to talk to him maybe one more time through this entire
campaign. I've had a few times where I've run out of names, and I'm just like, he is NPC 5.
Oh, see, I just start acting like I smashed my fingers against the keyboard, and I'll be like, yep, that's his name. What? How do you spell that?
I don't know.
Figure it out. Spell it however you want, however you think it sounds.
He's illiterate. He doesn't know how to spell his name.
Yep, he doesn't know. Dungeons? If you are going through like a small dungeon where you're like, hey, next week, you guys are going to raid this goblin camp.
Prep your monsters.
Prep your monsters. Prep your goblin camp. Kind of know where everything's going to be, where you want, like, where they're going to go.
Yeah, look at your map. You don't have to memorize your map, but give your map a once-over.
Yeah.
And read your monster stats.
Yeah.
At least once.
Do it.
Read the stats for your monsters.
Do it.
Because I almost TPK'd a party with shades because I didn't realize how much ambient damage those things do.
Yeah, it's a couple times you guys have almost died.
Oh, I know.
You know, my favorite one, because I've used them so much as players. I've used them so much as a GM. You guys just were the first party that just couldn't handle the volume, I guess, was more of the problem than anything. Poison dart frog.
Oh my gosh, those things almost killed us! We had to sleep for 2 weeks!
Yeah, for what, was it 2 weeks? Oh yeah, because then she did it again to you guys.
Well no, because George's character, because he was on the front lines, took so much constitution damage that it took nearly 2 weeks of rest in town for him to get fully up, back up to stats.
He had, 15, 16 con by the time that you guys left, he had like 5.
Yeah. Something like that. Like we had to carry him out. He was not doing good.
Yeah. We had a, for our lovely viewers who don't know about this, I had a closet witch. She could cast summon natural ally 2. One of the things that I like about Pathfinder, and it's some natural, or it's summon allies, whatever that may be, is that if you take the lower level creatures, you get more of them.
Yeah. And I think we had like 5 or 6.
There was a point you guys had 7 on the field. I cast it twice, and I rolled max on 1, 3 on the other.
That's right.
So I had 7 out on the field, and then her Dagger of Returning was the main thing that was hitting you.
Yeah, 1 point of damage, but over the course of like 18 rounds, that does a lot of damage.
Yeah, when you guys went hobbling out of that place, I was super surprised. I was like, they're frogs! They have like 12 AC and one hit point!
Icewind Dell, first session. Goblins. And these aren't Pathfinder goblins, these are D&D goblins. I nearly TPK'd the party in the first encounter with D&D 5th edition goblins.
Yeah. Yeah, it happens. I almost killed them with Sturge.
I had to make the party retreat. I made the goblins run. They had no reason to retreat, but I made them retreat to save the party.
Oh, that's magnificent.
But yeah, Read your monsters. That's what this comes down to.
So important. Read your monster stats.
I recommend if you have a monster manual or a bestiary or anything like that, if you know what monsters you're going to put in, bookmark the pages.
Oh, yeah. Bookmarking, that's...
Because you're not going to remember. You're not...
Yeah.
Unless you have a photographic memory, you're not going to just pull up your stats.
Yeah. Especially if it's your first time. I think that there's two or three monsters that I either know the direct page of or at least what tens they're in.
Yeah.
But that's because I've been GMing Pathfinder for a really long time. I have a pretty good idea on how to get to goblins pretty fast.
Yeah.
Most of the time, I don't even look at page numbers anymore. I just know it's all alphabetical. So I go, there's about right. Yeah. There we go.
Well, the problem with 5th edition, the monster manual, is that some of them are by type. So, like, you have to find aberrations, and then you have to find the monster within that. I'm like, just make everything alphabetical, please. Elementals.
Yep, same way.
Same way. Devils. That kind of stuff, same way, which is really obnoxious because I don't always remember what type of monster it is. Like, I don't remember if it's an apparition or a celestial or a devil.
God, yeah.
But, and then the other thing is be flexible.
Yeah.
Because I've had to a lot on the fly. Sometimes your monster just magically has less HP than it started with.
Sometimes it has magically more.
Sometimes it has a little bit more. Sometimes its AC is maybe just a little bit lower than the rules is written. Or maybe it's got a little bit more armor on it. It is okay to edit stats on the fly. You just have to be fair about it.
Yeah. I don't know how many times I've started a combat and then I have not done this and had it bite me in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
I've done this so many more times after that and made everything better. By there was supposed to be a mini boss. Dude was playing out of the advanced class guide. This is a good portion of why I don't let that book into my games anymore.
Yeah.
Unless everybody wants to play out of that or understands that those classes are going to be a little on the OP side comparatively.
Sure.
He was a Slayer Ranger. The guy happened to be human, which was one of his favorite enemies.
Yeah.
Which means he got +2 to hit, +2 to damage. Because he was part rogue, he got sneak attack on it. They were just high enough level that I'd like given everybody their first like +1
magic weapons. Yeah.
Just so that everybody felt a little special. And I do that. I normally do it a little earlier than some people do, but I normally compensate quite well for that.
Yeah. You know,
I play very intelligent creatures. Like, my goblins are not very stupid.
No, they're not. I've fought your goblins.
Yeah. My goblins, smart. My kobolds, smarter. I like to play intelligent creatures. That's why I have my players roll higher stats, though.
Yeah.
That's my compensation. Here, you get to be a little chunkier because I'm not going to hold back. I'm going to play my monsters smartly because I think they should be. If they're a long-lived village of goblins, they're not stupid. They know how to survive around humanity.
Yeah.
They're going to know a thing or two. They're not as smart as your wizard, probably. They're not as smart as probably your baseline human, but they're not dumb when it comes to surviving and fighting.
Yeah.
That's what they do. They're goblins. But he rolled up on it and critted and then ridiculous damage dumped out and killed it by 2 hit points over what its max was. I should have right there been like, yep, you did that. And then just reset his health pool to actually make it a fight because instead they walked out and no storyline whatsoever. Nothing happened. It didn't help the game. It only kind of hindered and hurt it.
Yeah. I usually, when I'm planning encounters, for me, for my games, if I have a boss, even if it's a mini boss, I usually estimate it's got a CR rating.
Yeah.
I usually estimate about how many rounds I think that boss should take to get done, even with high rolls, even with good rolls.
Yeah.
And if my players start tearing through it and we're in like 2 rounds of combat for something that should take 8 to 10 rounds of combat, I'm beefing that guy up.
Yeah.
I'm going to get him minions. You're going to get ambushed from, you're going to get flanked.
Yeah.
He's going to have a larger health pool. He's going to pick up a shield.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Like,
start upping their AC.
Like, it is okay to prep on the fly.
Yeah.
It is okay to do that kind of stuff because cooperative storytelling does take a little bit of flexibility.
Yeah. And he felt great that he murked a dude. He was like, yeah, I did great. They would have felt more successful had they had the boss fight.
Yeah.
Had to minorly even struggle through it and then completed it than him just killing a dude out on the street, more or less.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes that can make you feel like real awesome. But like,
but if you don't know they're a big bad guy and you just think that they're just another dude who's a bad guy rolling around, it doesn't feel that much more special anymore. You're like, oh yeah, I did good. Cool.
I'm currently playing in a Horde of the Dragon Queen, Tyranny of Dragons campaign.
How's that going?
Great.
Is the beginning, are they playing out of the new beginning?
No, they're playing out of the old beginning, but he's a very experienced GM.
Okay, so he's probably fixed it.
Yeah. He's fixed it. I've played this campaign before. It is already completely different than the campaign I played the first time.
It seems very much like one of those ones that can super just...
The way that it's running, it is not as chunky as written. So he is definitely editing as he goes.
Well, then from here, us on the game cabinet.
Hey, Josh, we love you.
Way to go,
buddy.
Yay! That it is not an easy thing to do to have to necessarily do that.
No.
Like, especially that module I've heard is really brutal. I've played through that as kind of written until our GM was like, oh God, I have to stop this.
There's a part in the beginning when you go to the church, and right outside the church, there is one of the dragon priest guys.
Yep.
He's a mini boss. He's got a decent chunk of HP. He's pretty hard to hit. This guy's supposed to be a fight.
Yeah.
And he did a really good job of spelling out exactly how powerful this, like just looking at this guy. So the reverence that the other cultists were giving him, all of that stuff, you know, this guy's a boss.
Yeah.
And our ranger, love her to death.
Oh.
She's like, I want to take a pot shot at this guy. I want a shot. She's also a brand new player. This is her first campaign. So she got to be the big goddamn hero.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
She let loose an arrow. Crit. The way this guy runs house rules for crits, she got 1 point over his max HP.
How does he run crits?
So he does, you get to roll, and then instead of doubling your dice, he lets you roll, and then you get to add an additional max die.
Okay.
So if your damage is a D8, you get to roll a D8 and then add 8, plus your other stats.
I kind of like that. That's
I
a pretty
really
cool roll.
Like that too.
Definitely makes sure that your crits are feeling good.
So she rolled an 8, added her stats, and put another 8 on top of it.
Yeah, he's chunky. He's not that chunky.
And she went, because he's a level 1 boss.
Yeah, he's chunky, but yeah, that's why
so
I was like,
so just arrow straight through the mask, dropped this guy in one hit.
Oh, see, and things like that can feel fun. You knew it was a boss.
That stuff is amazing.
Yeah, you knew it was a boss, and you got the satisfying, like, oh, I took a mini boss in one shot.
And brand new player gets to feel like...
like a BA.
Like the coolest person.
Yeah, those are when those moments are good. Like, knowing that you're doing, like, accomplishing something with that.
I feel like we should have another DM Q&A episode.
Oh, I would love, you know what? We should do exactly that. This is a wonderful time. Any of our listeners should start dropping us stuff.
Yeah.
Like GMing questions, and we'll sift through them and start answering some
of
them.
Yeah. We want to do more like, hey, how-tos kind of things.
Yeah.
So if you have questions about GMing that we didn't answer here, because this was a very broad general, we got to kind of chatting.
Yeah. Well, that's what GMing is, learning how to GM is a lot of just talking with other GMs.
And so what are some of the things that you guys want to learn? What are some of the things you're having trouble with in your games, or things that are stopping you from picking up a game and running it for your friends? What can we help you with?
Yeah, let us know. Let us help you. I think I've helped get 2 or 3 people GMing by just kind of browbeating them and being like, just do it. Just do it.
And
I'm here to help them.
And we talk a lot about Pathfinder, we talk a lot about D&D, because those are the big two that are happening right now. But if you have questions about other systems,
oh yeah.
If Drew or I do not know how to run it, we know people who know how to run it.
Or I'll find out how to run it.
And we'll answer your questions. So, come talk to us. We want engagement.
Yeah, we want to know. But I think that this is a wonderful time for us to go ahead and take our books, put them away back into the cabinet, and call it closed for the day. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for coming and hanging out with us. Next time, we will be talking more games.
I'm looking forward to it.
I am too. Have a lovely afternoon. Stay safe out there, my Washingtonians.
Oh man, stay cool, guys. Heatstroke is a thing.
Drink water.
PSA warning, make sure you're hydrating. Make sure you're staying safe.
Yeah. Good night, everybody.
You've been listening to The Game Cabinet at the AU Radio Podcast Network. If you're interested in any of the titles from today's episode, you can check out the link tree in the description to visit Adventures Underground at their online store to browse the selections or inquire about special orders. If you'd like to contact the show, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just check out that link tree in the description. Or you can email the show at podcast@advunderground.com. You can also support this show and all the awesome shows on AU Radio that you love by becoming a patron of the AU Radio Podcast Network. You can find us at patreon.com/ADV Underground. For as little as $1 a month, you can help us continue to create these shows, and soon, many more.
You've been listening to the AU Radio Podcast Network. Music is provided by CubbyPurplePlanet.com and BenSound.com. Views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Adventures Underground. AU Radio is a production of Adventures Underground. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.